It's a very strange situation we're in. Humanity knows we are making something that might literally kill every single one of us. And we're still doing it. And this is strange.
I want to start off with like something I read on your bio on the Pause AI's website. So you wrote that, "I learned about AI safety approximately 13 months ago and have changed my entire life in response to this. I moved to the UK and have spent the last 6 months full-time learning about AI safety and how the world ought to respond to this. I've managed a group of volunteers, met with MPs, and organised a protest outside the Bletchley Park Summit." So yeah, the first question is, what exactly happened to you around roughly 30 months ago?
In February, I went on holiday. I bought a one-way ticket to Europe to try and explore more about the world. And I learned a lot of things. Some of those things were kind of important. One of those was the rate of change of AI and the consequences it will have. And I had a free week or so in Scotland, of all places. And I sat down and I read more about AI, and importantly about AI safety, and learned a lot. Inner alignment, outer alignment, all of these things. And to me, it seemed like this was really important. Like if the numbers were correct, this is probably the most important problem facing the world. But there's only a few people working on it, which was a little bit strange. And so I thought I'd better learn more. And so when I was visiting Oxford, there's this group of people called Effective Altruists, and they seem to be working on this AI safety thing. And they have an office, a place in Oxford. And so I decided I'd go talk to them. And so I walked up to their front door and I knocked out. I talked to the receptionist, who then talked to another receptionist, who then got me a meeting with the office manager. We sat down and had this discussion about AI safety and why it was important. And they put me onto a group called 80,000 Hours, and gave career advice on working on this. And I talked to one of their members or emailed through with them and learned more about this and continued reading on my travels. And when I was visiting Poland, I read there was an event happening in Warsaw, EAGX Global, EAG Global X Warsaw, whatever, EAGX Warsaw. And I wasn't invited, but I decided I was going anyway. And so I got on a train and went to the capital. And the next day I showed up to the conference and talked to security and sat down next to the person at the front desk and had a discussion with him for half an hour. And he was impressed enough with what I seemed to understand about AI safety that he invited me to come to the conference. So I got a meeting with the person organizing the conference, and I was invited as a guest free of charge. So there I met many other people, these effective altruists who are working on AI safety and adjacent things, and learned more about it. And there I met some significant people and learned something called short timelines and what that might mean. But it wasn't until I went to another conference after that where I met some of the AI engineers, AI safety experts, and learned that we weren't going to solve something called alignment. This is how you digitally have goals in the time frame that we think we have until we make these AIs that are as intelligent as humans. And that timeline may be within 10 years from now, or even sooner, based on who estimates it. And that was very significant, learning that we have this single greatest, what seems to be the single most important problem facing humanity, and there are, well, at that point in time, 200 or so people working on it, and we weren't likely to solve it in the time frame we had. This just seemed so important that I had to learn more. And I did. I met some of the experts. I read even more about this material and changed my entire life. I moved permanently from living in New Zealand to living in the UK. I didn't see my family for 12 months because I just needed to understand this as much as possible and do many things. As you mentioned, I organized, Pause AI, we organized a protest in front of the Bletchley Park Summit because even though we advocated for summit, our people encouraged the British government to have the summit happen, we still weren't happy that it was going to be talked about seriously enough. And yeah, I changed my entire career and my life to work on this.
What was your background before? What were you up to before this all happened?
I was a farmer on an island in the Pacific, New Zealand. Sounds fancy. But I was managing an agricultural property. It was a dairy farm, ran 600 milking cows plus young, 750 milking cows plus 500 or so young stock. And yeah, it's a bit of a change to go from managing a farm to working on AI safety or AI advocacy and communications.
So perhaps for someone who knows like very little about AI and AI safety, yeah, let's start with this. So what exactly are the things you're concerned about, worried about that have kind of led to you kind of drastically turning your life around, moving here and starting all this stuff?
So the core concern of AI safety can more or less be summarized in two sentences. And that is, humans are top of the food chain because we're the most intelligent. If we make an AI that's more intelligent than us, we stop being top of the food chain. And that's, obviously this is a really complicated field like any form of science, but those two sentences really summarize why it's important for this to go well. Because if we make something more intelligent than ourselves, we don't, it doesn't have the goals and things we care about, and it wants to achieve its goals instead. It will compete with us for resources. And historically, one side loses. And this has almost always been the less intelligent side. If we compare humans to chimpanzees or to Neanderthals, humans compete for some parts of the rainforest. Those rainforests just get cleared for human activities. The chimpanzees get killed or move somewhere else. If we compare ourselves to the Neanderthals, they are, well, they're probably the most similar species to ourselves that have existed, one of them at least. And we competed with them for access to huntable animals and space and society. But humans are more intelligent, and the Neanderthals are near extinct. It's a reasonable conclusion that this, if we make an AI that's more intelligent for us, and we compete with it for resources, we lose. And that's not very good for us. And you might be asking, why don't we just not build it? And that's an obvious answer, and some people are working on that to some extent. The thing people don't grasp often is the competitive dynamics to make an AI more and more capable. So there's obviously a lot of money in AI. People who probably use ChatGPT, this is the thing that's thinking and saying things that are as smart as smart people in some fields. Obviously doesn't know everything, but it's a significant improvement on the AIs that came before it. And if we keep making them more and more intelligent, they can substitute for more and more human things. So obviously money to be made doing this. And so as us as humans, we are chasing the goal of making AIs which are as intelligent as ourselves. And we don't actually know how to give these things the goals we want yet. It's an unsolved problem in machine learning is, how you robustly get an AI goals you wanted to have.
The risks you're concerned about go all the way up to like total human extinction. You're concerned about these existential risks as they're referred to. Can you give maybe a couple of examples? Like how could this actually happen for someone who can't really get their head around an AI cause and like an extinction event? What are some of the ways this could happen?
So there's two ways to think about this. The first one is to realize that asking a colony of ants how the humans will kill them isn't a very helpful question. The ants might conclude that humans are bigger than them, so they'll step on them. But if humans are wanting to build a highway or a housing development and there's a bunch of ants there, we might kill them by driving a bulldozer through their entire house, or we might kill them by insecticide, some chemical the ants have never heard of or never know exists. And so asking humans how something more intelligent than ourselves will kill us isn't really a helpful discussion, because if something is sufficiently more intelligent than ourselves, it will think of an attack that has the defenders have very little defense against. For example, for the ants, we will think of using insecticide. The ants don't have much defense against insecticide, and so it's quite effective. AIs, if they're sufficiently more intelligent than ourselves, will think of something attack effect we haven't got much defense against. If you want a concrete example of something like this, we use disease. Diseases have killed millions of humans across the world. In fact, the most recent one, COVID, killed multiple million people already. And it is not, well, there's obviously some conjecture about this. The current expert opinion is 25% probability of a lab leak. It appears to be natural, close enough to be natural to not be engineered, but the science to engineer a virus is becoming more and more achievable. And it's not a hard inferential step to say we could engineer something, say, as virulent as measles, but as deadly as smallpox or one of the hemorrhagic fevers. And so if humans can realistically do this in a few years, it's not a hard guess for an AI that's more intelligent itself to come up with this. And then, okay, so we now have a tool to kill humans with a disease. Maybe it doesn't kill everyone, but you can use a bunch of other things. AIs can control robotics. This is like the classic Terminator one where they show up and shoot us. Not very realistic, but it's more like, can AIs pilot a bunch of drones? Like, for example, we can use in warfare in, say, Ukraine, or some sort of Skynet-style things. And these are all possible ways, but the important thing to realize is if an AI is sufficiently smarter than you, it's going to find a selection of the best ways. And unless you have defenses against those, you probably just die to them. The analogy might be, is like, how would chimpanzees form a war against humans and try to win that? And the answer is they just won't win, because the humans are much more intelligent than them, or we are more intelligent than them. We have access to technology they don't understand. And that same inference can be used for an insufficiently advanced AI. It has access to technology we don't understand, and it thinks in ways we don't know.
Yeah, what you're saying, like, sounds sensible, sounds intuitive. So thinking about the kind of landscape of people working on this, why do you think people, all these very intelligent people at these companies, are working on this technology then? Do they disagree with you?
The CEOs of three of the main labs have signed the open letter, which is, I can't remember the exact quote off the top of my head, but mitigating the risk of extinction from AI is a global scale priority alongside other societal scale risks such as pandemics, nuclear war. I can't remember the exact line, but it's something similar to that. These people know the risk. Well, they know the risk is plausible. I think they probably disagree on the percentages, although the CEO of Anthropic is on record with a risk similar to what the rest of the field estimates. And so it's a very strange situation we're in. Humanity knows we are making something that might literally kill every single one of us, and we're still doing it. And this is strange. And there's companies are still making these things because it's profitable. They make money from designing an AI and selling that AI services to Uber. You use ChatGPT, companies use ChatGPT, they pay a license, or Claude, or Gemini, or one of the others. They make these things because there's money to be made, and that drives their choices. We know the current versions, the current generation of AI can't kill humans, or can't kill all humans, because, and this sounds unpleasant, but someone already tried. Someone, as what I hope was a funny joke, they made an AI called Chaos GPT. This was an AI that was given goals. It's given long-term memory. It's given access to the internet. And it was set with, among other goals, to kill all humans on Earth. And it tried to achieve this goal. Yeah, it's crazy, right? Like, someone, it's a funny joke, made an AI that was set with the goal of killing all humans on Earth. And we know it failed because we're still alive. Read about efficient ways to kill humans, discover nuclear weapons, read about those. It more or less worked out it couldn't make a nuclear weapon on its own, so it needed some followers, some humans. And so for various reasons, it was given access to Twitter, and it tried to recruit followers on Twitter to help in its plan to kill all humans. And thankfully it failed, because we're still alive, and it was shut down. But it's an insane world to realize that, Rosie. We are only still alive because the AI failed. It was trying to kill us. It had access to the resources of the internet and most of the world. It only failed because it wasn't intelligent enough to work out how to put the pieces together. And this is one of those things you hear in a horror film, but this is real life. We are living the horror film.
Yeah, and you're part of this group, Pause AI. So yeah, can you say a little bit about what you guys get up to and what your beliefs are as a group and what your kind of plans are? Like, what are you trying to do in the next few years?
Pause AI's main goal is pausing AI. Rather, we recognize that AI is useful in many ways, but the development of more and more intelligent AI is too high a chance of killing us to be worth doing unless it's done safely. We advocate for the pausing of AIs more advanced than the current generation of models, which is the GPT-4 equivalent, Claude 3.5, whatever, until we've solved technical alignment and have some way to coordinate its deployment if we do make ones that are aligned. But yeah, the pausing of frontier AI development until we understand it better. We advocate for political solutions to this. We're part of a coalition for a bright plan for AI that is a group of international NGOs who are trying to get the world to lay a clear plan about how we actually go about this with the same with inspiration from how the world managed nuclear weapons. There was a point in time where nuclear weapons were regulated. We have international non-proliferation treaties that weren't perfect but succeeded in massively reducing the amount of nuclear weapons in the world, and humanity is safe and fortress. A similar treaty for AI makes sense. Some of the activities Pause AI have done, we have organized protests, we've generated media attention and discussion about this, we have provided information to members of parliament from different countries. We have provided information to members of the community and business, etc. And educate them on what the risk truly is and help them understand what they would prefer to have done about it.
Of everyone I know in their kind of AI safety space in London and a few people I've met kind of from abroad, it seems to me you feel like the kind of weight of these issues, kind of emotionally, like the most of anyone I've ever met. So yeah, in the last couple of years since you've been interested in stuff, I'm just intrigued to ask you, like, psychologically, what impact has this had on you? Like, how's your mental health?
It's definitely gone down. Like, it's a great source for bravery, I think, is a positive spin. But it's challenging to learn that you and a selection of a few hundred people have this seemingly huge information asymmetry over the world. Like, this is like one of the starting things, like meeting people even inside the British government, even people who are regulating AI, have like no concept of how fast this is changing, what the risks are. It was very strange to me. And they're civil servants, they've got a job, they're going to decide things, but they have like no understanding of the technology they're actually trying to regulate. And there are some people inside the British government who are very informed about this, who understand this really well. The AI Safety Institute understands it, for the most part, understands this quite well. But outside of that, the understanding is very low. And the information asymmetry is startling. Like, there are entire countries whose governments don't understand this. For example, when I learned about this, this seemed really important. I wrote a bunch of reports and I went back to New Zealand. I met with members of parliament in New Zealand. I sat them down and went through, like, this is what the threats are, this is what's happening. And I saw the fear in their eyes. When they grasp it, oh, this is how big the problem is. Oh, this could absolutely kill us and my children. And this is the problem that happening. Like, when they see the examples, when they look at the numbers, you can see that it clicks in their brain. They get it. They go, oh shit. And I talked to members of the New Zealand, people with security clearances in New Zealand, and informed us of all these things. And I can't say the exact opinions, but the politicians were surprised, as were most of the citizens. And the summits that the British government organised, the Bletchley Park in Seoul, there are countries who weren't even showing up to these. It's like, this is the single biggest geopolitical threat you face, unless you're currently at war, and you're not even attending the summit that will discuss how it plays out. Like, this is an enormous geopolitical blunder for most countries, because even if this problem does get solved, and I do hope it gets solved, it's not going to be solved in a way that people aren't paying attention and going to be happy about. Perhaps I talk about the four end games to this. There are four main end games about how this AI problem plays out. AI end game one is an AI moratorium. End game two is an AI Leviathan. End game three is something called defensive acceleration. End game four is human extinction. And these are the four ways out of that are stable solutions to the problem we face with how to manage AI. And AI moratorium is where the world more or less unilaterally agrees, enough of the world agrees to not make AIs that are more intelligent than ourselves and reinforce that. In game two is this AI Leviathan, where we deliberately make an AI that is smarter than all humans and cede total sovereignty to the AI. And whatever the world looks like is based on whatever goals we teach that AI to have. In game three is something called defensive acceleration, where we rapidly accelerate defensive technologies faster than offensive technologies. This is an example would be vaccine development faster than people can design biological weapon. And this is an end game that in the it looks easy enough at the start. Yeah, we just design vaccines and whatnot. But in the limit, you need to be outpacing an AI that is probably trying to kill you using a biological weapon. And this means things like daily vaccinations for your entire population and massive defense against cyber attacks, removal of certain pieces of infrastructure from the internet entirely to ensure they remain stable. It's complicated but doable. And in game four is human extinction. This is just where we either let the AIs win and they just eliminate humans from the earth. And some people argue that this is the right thing to do. Richard Sutton is a famous AI scientist who actively advocates for this, because I don't know if I understand his exact motivations, but AIs may be morally superior to humans as they have better moral choices out the world. And so it's natural that we will be replaced by them. This is obviously not what most people want. But those are the four end games, ways out of this situation we're in. And I advocate for in-game one. We here at Pause AI, we advocate for a global pause on the development of AI that is more intelligent than humans until we can either control it or understand it well enough. And some people advocate for the Leviathan, where we deliberately make an AI which takes control of the Earth or takes effective monopoly on political power of the Earth. Some companies might want this if they are the ones that help shape the goals of the AI. And there's a few people who, maybe with strong libertarian mindsets, want the defensive acceleration, where we rapidly accelerate defensive technologies, even though this probably comes at the cost of a lot of people. And yeah, those are the four ways out.
What do you think is the most likely?
What's one of those four is the most likely?
Yeah, the most likely outcome of these at the moment.
So, I'm an optimist. I like to think we can achieve lots of things, but I also see the numbers. And the average expert opinion is a 16% chance we get human extinction in game four. And if you ask some of the best experts, like Jeffrey Hinton or other top tier AI researchers, some of them give higher numbers. I mean, Jeffrey Hinton is more at a 50% chance. It's nearly a coin flip at this point that we get human extinction versus one of the other three outcomes. And this is probably because we fight over how we develop this. Like, particularly those who are pushing for in-game two, the Leviathan. If you are a company that makes the AI that disempowers the world and you succeed successfully in giving it values, you can probably negotiate it for it to treat you favorably after the fact. And the people who work in these frontier labs more or less don't trust each other very well. If we use OpenAI, was formed as a response to DeepMind because there was disagreement of how to manage AI. And OpenAI has gone through, shall we say politely, many staff turnovers, where a lot of the key people who were either founded the organization or worked on how to make the AI safe and aligned have left and formed other organizations. And obviously this is complicated things about why it's happened, but they probably don't trust each other to do it well. And I think the number is much higher than 16% chance of being extinct, because we foolish humans fight over how to do this rather than having the courage to draw the hard line in the sand and say this is what we want to achieve.
How did your family and friends react to you moving over here, and kind of have kind of react since asking you, you know, how are things going, what are you up to, and you tell them you're doing all this stuff? I'm intrigued.
Family initially supportive, trying new things, they're quite happy with that. When I came back and met, saw them after 12 or so months and told them of my adventures, they were happy. They didn't enjoy learning about the risks, and this is a pretty normal reaction. Like, it's unpleasant to realize just how bad we've let the situation get to, how angry people are, and how close we are to crazy things happening. My brother was initially quite, he didn't want to learn about it. And with, I don't know, some encouragement and some explanation, he got a point across. Dad, again, he learned it pretty well. Like, I think he understood it reasonably well. Mum is still probably doesn't understand the full extent, but she knows it's important. She doesn't probably know the full dangers. But yeah, it was, they're definitely supportive of me to work members. But I think they struggled to come to terms with the risk. And this is pretty normal. If I was going to talk about the psychology of the risk of AI, there's a lot of psychological factors that make it hard for people to want to think about this thing. It's scary to realize that there is something out there that is trying to kill you, and that might even succeed in killing you. This is not a pleasant circumstance for people to be in. And obviously we can fix it. Like, this is the thing, like, I talk about the bad things, I talk about the scary things, but this is an entirely solvable problem. Humans have coordinated on a whole range of issues. There are end games that we know exist and that are, with the right allocation of resources, achievable. And so, like, this is not a hopeless situation. This is very much like, here is a big, severe problem, and here's how humanity is going to overcome that. And we can do this. But many people do struggle to want to understand it. It's unpleasant to come across it. It's unpleasant to learn. And there are some psychological blockers that make it hard for people to process this. One of them is something called cognitive dissonance, where it's emotionally unpleasant to hold two competing thoughts in your head, where there's this idea that I want to feel safe and happy and like there's no threats in the world, and there's this clear threat in the world. And people try and reject one of those ideas to get rid of this dissonance. And so they can reject I feel safe, or they can reject this is a dangerous thing. And most people, well, many people, not most, many people choose to reject the dangerous thing, pretend it's not real, so that they can just keep feeling safe. And this is all well and good if you're someone in a part of society who doesn't really shape the world much. That's fine. But this is not an option if you're a political leader. This is not an option if you are one of the CEO scientists who work on this. There is no hiding from this problem if you are a politician of a first world country. And I'm not a politician. For me, there's no hiding from it either. This is an important issue that the world may fail to overcome if we hide for too long. So we're not going to hide. We're going to talk about this. We're going to solve it.
Yeah, you talk about the resistance like a lot of people have to accepting ideas like this. If you were to introspect for a second, like what do you think it is about you and your personality that does mean you're the guy who's ended up, you know, taking this drastic life turn and end up here? Can you have any sense of why you're like this?
I thought a lot about this, and the biggest barrier for people to understand AI risk is the emotional resilience to recognize the fact that they might die. This is the biggest barrier for most people, is the realization that this could kill them if we screw it up. And I'm quite emotionally resilient, and this is for, I guess, a range of factors. I guess practice. I practice being brave. And so this was naturally something for me to be practicing being brave about. And I'm in the bottom 5% of emotionality. I am very much a rational thinker. I make a lot of my decisions based on logic rather than feeling. And the logical conclusion was, yes, this is obviously important. I'm going to work on it. even though the feeling component was like, this is scary. I think for me, interpreting that scariness, that fear, to be like, this is an opportunity to be brave, and seeing the positive side that is helpful. Like, rather than thinking this is a scary thing, I don't want to think about, this is an opportunity to display bravery. And I don't know, I try to be a brave person. Yeah,
if you could also to touch on like a couple of objections that maybe people have to the approach of like pause AI and seriously think about this. So I'll give you maybe two, and maybe you can answer them separately or together. One is like, how feasible is it that we're going to be able to convince governments, orgs, etc., to actually instigate a pause? And another one is, this is another kind of classic worry, is like the worry about bad actors. So perhaps we get certain labs, orgs, or countries to pause AI, and then you have other countries that continue, maybe reach AGI, superintelligence, and so on before us, countries or organizations that people perhaps worried about. So yeah, the feasibility of it, and then the worry about other people continuing their AI development with word of pause. What does pause AI, and or maybe just yourself, think about these kind of worries?
As I said before, there are four end games. There are four ways out of the situation we're in. And the easiest end game is human extinction. This is by far the easiest. You put almost no effort into these things. You make them really intelligent, and they just go, that's the easiest end game. The other three are more difficult. And like, this is the world's most important problem. It's if challenging. You either get coordination of the governments and the labs who are working on this, or you get one of the labs to overthrow the world and teach the AI to have the goals that are useful, or you succeed at accelerating a whole range of defensive technologies sufficient that humans can survive in the face of AIs that may be actively trying to kill us. None of these three are easy. This is not an easy thing. If you want easy problems, look somewhere else in the world. The comparison is like, this is at least as hard as the Apollo project. This is at least as hard as putting man on the moon, or humans on the moon. I don't know which of the three is easiest. This is hard to tell. If we want comparisons, the AI moratorium requires coordination between, well, at this point, really three countries, which is USA, UK, China, to agree to a treaty. And I understand there is already like some partial treaties that have already been written as of a few days ago now, I think, to coordinate on this technology and enforce that upon the world. US, UK, China are three members of the Security Council, or the UN Security Council, and represent the majority of the world's military force. If these three countries agree to terms for AI, these are the countries that are developing them, and these are the countries that have the military means to enforce the treaty if needed. You probably only need to get these three countries to be involved, and many other countries would agree to similar terms if they're favorable, particularly if the alternative is the real risk that AI does kill us all. And so, yeah. Humanity has had coordination on nuclear weapons to some extent, obviously not perfect. We have the states that have developed nuclear weapons without that being desirable to the rest of the international community. And if you want a treaty like this to work, this probably needs more forceful implementation of it than the nuclear non-proliferation treaties. And that's the unfortunate reality. So that's end game one. The end game two, how feasible is end game two? Is this requires making an AI that is more intelligent than humans, which on the current timeline seems doable, but ensuring it has values that keep some or all humans around. Otherwise, you just get in game four, which is extinction. And this is probably more difficult. I think most people don't grasp how difficult this one is. It's because in order for it to happen, you need to be able to train an AI to have values which are aligned with your survival and maybe your flourishing, that are sufficiently resilient to almost anything it could do wrong. And so value is fragile. It's hard to get every characteristic you care about written down, or at least not written down, trained into something else that you make. If you've ever been a parent, it is hard to parent your children to be perfect children, to have all the things you think are important in the world. Because as a parent, you don't know everything about the world because you're just a person. And it is hard to communicate those ideas to a child in the way that they internalize all those. And so this is obviously not a perfect analogy for teaching AI, but this is also, it is difficult to teach an AI to have the goals you want. And the third way is also difficult, or in game three, which is massively accelerating the technology that humanity needs to defend itself. And this is because technological discovery is difficult, but it's also because you're searching through a lot of unknown unknowns to find the technologies you need to defend. There's a lot of space that needs to be searched. So again, this is also difficult. By far, the easiest option is extinction. By far, the easiest option is you just put a little effort into this and we just die. But that's the lazy way out, and I'm not a lazy person. And many other capable people on Earth are not either.
So I guess it's like these objections kind of do make sense. There are always double worries, but what you think is most likely is going to go wrong is if we just, yeah, continue as we are and don't try pause.
You can choose one of the other three in-games which lead to human survival. Yeah. You don't have to pick the pause. You don't have to. I just advocate for it because I think it is the most achievable and leads to the best outcomes for most people.
Yeah, and Pause AI do these protests. I've seen a couple of them online. You obviously literally do go out on the streets with placards and try and get your message out there. But I've heard, I think one of your members say that you're going to commit to not end up doing any of the kind of activist like stuff, like someone like Just Stop Oil. You won't be blocking cars or this kind of thing. Is that right? You want to keep things kind of relatively peaceful and ordered.
There are multiple groups in the public advocacy space who vary along the spectrum from conservative to radical. Control AI advocates around deepfakes and is very mild what they do. Pause AI is a moderate position. We say the things that are important, we engage in protests, but we don't disrupt things. Stop AI engages in disruptive protests, they chain themselves to bridges, etc. And there's probably some more people, but further towards radical, who engage in other violent actions, but I don't know who those are. Pause AI has made the clear choice. We've taken the middle ground's not the right word. Not conservative, but more moderate. We've agreed to claim the moderate ground to sort of protesting. We'll be non-disruptive, non-violent, but we'll say the message in the public space. And we've allowed other groups to claim the more radical positions.
What would you say is like the most surprising thing you've encountered in the last 19 months or so whilst being on this journey? Maybe it's like something you've learned about AI. Maybe it's like an experience you've had meeting a particular person. Is there anything that like stands out?
I mean, there's been a lot of surprises in the last 19 months. And I think I would struggle to be as surprised again. I was a little bit unpleasantly surprised when I learned more about how different governments work and just how flawed some first world governments are. That was probably surprising to realize just a lot of this is just people trying to make up it as they go along. That was unpleasant discovery. Well, definitely surprising. That was surprising was realizing like there were at least 90 months ago, whatever, there were 200 people working on this. This is the single most important thing in the world. And there are 200 experts on this. Insane. By 200 experts, I mean I'm working on alignment tools, actually solving the problem, as opposed to people who work on other AI. Right? There's obviously lots of people working on AI. But like working on like, the core problem about how to align these things or how to manage how this develops. So yeah, surprising things would be the incompetence of some governments or parts of governments and how few people that were working on SFG 2 years ago.
Do you have a message to anyone watching this? Maybe these are people in the general public more than someone kind of involved in the field. If they're kind of concerned, maybe they're not concerned. Like, do you just have anything you want to share with people?
I guess this affects you. This affects your life. You can be a part of the solution if you want to be. Must sound a little bit corny, but yeah, I guess that gets the idea across. It's important for people to realize that like, this does affect them. This is their life that's been decided. And if they want to have more say in how their life plays out, they can be part of the solution. They can write letters to members of parliament. They can engage in these protests. They can, if they want, if they're a scientific researcher, they can become part of the research team. There are choices they can make.
Yeah, and when people like kind of interact with a new AI development that's released, so obviously people have interacted with ChatGPT and there's going to be more exciting things that come out, and they obviously feel some excitement to play around with it and stuff, you probably feel a slightly different emotion sometimes with people doing that. Is there anything you want to say about how people should maybe reflect on the news when some new exciting things come out? Because I'm just intrigued how maybe you respond when something comes out, you play around with it, you may be more freaked than kind of excited by it.
I'm definitely excited by some of the developments. Like, I like tech, tech's great, but I'm very aware of the risks. I'm aware that like this is a dangerous thing. We are playing with fire, and we would prefer not to be burnt. And some of the population has already been burnt. If you ask many digital artists who've had their artwork taken, put into these models without their consent and without repayment for their copyright, they're already been burnt. Like, there are plenty of people who have already been harmed. If you want to look at the Israel-Gaza conflict, allegedly an AI called Lavender makes choices about who lives and dies in that conflict. It provides allegedly provides analysis to the Israeli military about who is likely to be a Hamas terrorist or Hamas agent or not, and provides kill advice to their military, who then follow on this military. And allegedly, they are confident enough with the software that they just follow it, its advice, without really checking, with minimal checks. And so that there are people who have already been killed by AI. There's allegedly already been people who have been killed by AI. There is definitely people who have already been harmed and had their economic livelihood damaged by them. This is already affecting people, and it will continue to affect people unless we manage it well.
I always ask guests the same question to end the show, so I'm intrigued about your take here. But the question is, yeah, what do you think it means to live a good life?
Ooh, okay. This is, I like this one. So I did a lot of reading about psychology, philosophy, when I was about 23. I had my, midlife crisis, who knows? And read a lot about philosophy that I previously thought was a waste of time, but it was helpful. And I guess if I was to summarize my worldview, I'm an existentialist. I acknowledge that there is no inherent meaning and purpose in the world. If we want meaning and purpose, we must create it for ourselves. And I read further on this, and I definitely don't agree to the religion, but Stoicism is something I draw inspiration from, this concept where you have virtues you try to embody. And I do this. I try to be wise, I try to be brave, I try to be temperate, I try to be just. And I derive personal satisfaction from embodying these virtues. I don't really care if other people know or care. I do it for me, and that helps.
Well, thanks so much for spending the time with me today, speaking, sharing your stories, sharing your thoughts on AI, telling us about Pause AI. It's been a really fascinating chat. Thanks, William.
Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Thanks for watching this episode. If you enjoyed it, please consider hitting the subscribe button below, and I hope to see you here again.